Blog Talk Radio.
Cosmic Citizens, welcome to the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Andre Rodatis. I'm your host today, and with me are my wonderful co-hosts, Marvin Gowron, Chuck Thurston, and Pamela Chaddock. Good morning, gang.
Yes, good morning.
Hey, Andre.
Hi, Andre.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Chuck.
Hi,
good morning. What a wonderful day, and for most of the people that are in our listening neighborhood, maybe not if you're listening on the archive a number of days later, but maybe so. The polar vortex is alive and well and reaching many of us. Maybe not you, Marvin, yet, but I'm in Sammamish at my daughter's place, and it is 15 degrees Fahrenheit, which I'm told by Marvin is quite unusual for the Seattle area.
Oh, Seattle.
Yeah. It rarely gets down that cold. But usually it's very dry and often. Is it sunny up there?
Not sunny yet. I don't know that it's going to be. It looks like it's overcast, it's breezy, and it's 15 degrees.
It was 11
and I've been out in it because the thermostat has gone out in the house here, of all days. Oh. Of course, that's Murphy's Law.
Oh my!
And then it's like something like 54 degrees in the house right now, and outside I was having gate problems, so I was working on clearing some stuff away from the gate in this temperature. The gloves were not even enough, the gloves that I had anyway. Very quickly you feel that.
15. And Chuck, you're in the Boulder area, and Pam, you're in California, aren't you? Where are you?
Ashland, Oregon, Southern Oregon.
We woke up today to 11 below.
Ooh.
Yes.
What is it?
That's what my daughter-in-law... 11 below, in the Denver metro area, all over.
Gosh.
Lakewood, Boulder.
You know, that that takes me back. I grew up in Montreal, Canada, for my first 15 years, and I remember times in, you know, in the middle of the winter when we'd have a cold snap and it would be down at 25 below without the wind chill. It would be down that low. It was crazy. Yeah. And now I'm in Boulder, Colorado, Boulder City, Nevada. And so we have a cold snap as well, which means it gets down during the day. The peak of the day is in the 50s, and then it's down around the 30s, in the 30s, in the peak of the night. So it's not bad.
Yeah. Well, should the polar vortex touch you, you'll probably lose something like 20 or 30 degrees from your normal. So, yeah. Anyway, there are people in our listening audience that are having it much worse. I know that one of the guys that Gary Tong and I typically are in touch with, he's up in the Edmonton area of Alberta, Canada, and already before the vortex had hit us, they were having 40 below zero. So, and that's that's true
that's
Celsius and Fahrenheit, because for those of you that don't know, that's where the two scales coincide.
Oh my.
40 below.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's crazy.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to be studying The Infinite Spirit today. We're starting that paper, those two papers, rather, with paper 8 and the intro and all of that. That'll be fun. Before we do so, Marvin has a new series coming up through UUI called Homecoming, and he'd like to tell us about it. Marvin, take it away.
Yeah. Thank you, Andre. So it's on the UUI platform, Urantia University. Actually, I'm going to ask you to hold just 1 second. We have our little household kitty cat, Zeus. And he was scratching at the door, so I had to take care of that. The stuff of life.
Animals are fun, aren't they?
They are a constant source of amusement. So it's going to be on the UUI platform. UUI is Urantia University Institute, or otherwise Urantia University. And a number of us are very active on that platform these days, lots of activity. Andre is busy on it, as am I, and the executive director is Elizabeth Callahan and Ari Horn and Merritt Horn. There's a number of our friends very busy teaching and organizing and engaging activities on that platform. And one of the things that one of the events that is scheduled to relaunch on January 28th is something that I helmed back around a year ago for a few months, and then had circumstances I had to suspend it. But it was a Sunday morning event, and the title of it was Homecoming, a Spiritual Family Gathering. That was the title, Homecoming. And we ran it for a few months, and we're going to be kicking it back into gear here January 28th. And we have an ambitious schedule. We're going to be doing it every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific, from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, so equivalent times in the Mountain, Central, Eastern. And also, we've timed it so that people in Europe and Africa can participate as well, and obviously in South America. That would be their evening time. And I'm going to be hosting it. Elizabeth, our dear friend and sister Elizabeth, is going to be co-hosting it with me. And And the format, there will be a formal first hour, and the format for that first hour is about a 20-minute segment, 20, 25-minute segment for teaching and inspiration, which I and Elizabeth will be sharing, and we might have guests from time to time as well. This is on Zoom, by the way, and Andre's going to share the place at the UUI website where you can sign up to receive notices, so you sort of get an update when it's happening and what the theme is for that Sunday. So the first segment will be thematic, a teaching segment, and then we'll move into breakout sessions of 3 to 4 people where folks can get to know each other and chat about their reactions to the content of the first 20 minutes. And then everyone returns and we have about a 10-minute quiet worship period as well. And the idea is to socialize not only with each other around the core teachings of the Urantia book, but socialize with God, in a sense. Spend some time in quiet communion and let spirit, in all of the spirit's modalities, you know, meaning the indwelling thought adjuster and the presence of Jesus in the spirit of truth and our mother spirit and our angels, all the celestials that are there to help us, give them a chance to work with us internally with what we've been sharing with each other socially. So that's the first hour, and then we'll have some housekeeping announcements, and then for about 5 minutes, and then we'll take a 5-minute break and come back for a half hour of large group fellowship where it'll be open Zoom conversation. I'll be facilitating that, and we'll be getting people's reactions to what they experienced and the sort of the highlights of what they experienced in that first hour around the theme of that Sunday. So it's going to be quite a lot to do, but I'm excited about it. I think the main thing that's going to be challenging is to do it every Sunday ongoing. I think it's got a lot of potential. I'll just say a couple of other things about it. In association with Homecoming, so the title's Homecoming, a Spiritual Family Gathering, and that gives you an idea of the sort of the culture we're hoping to encourage, the kind of sharing. We're also going to have every Tuesday and Thursday at the same time, 10 to 11:30, every Tuesday and Thursday morning, 10 to 11:30 Pacific time. It's going to be a forum. It's going to be called the Family Way Forum. And what we're going to be looking at, it's a forum for cultivating teachers and leaders and ministers and evangelists, people who feel called to work with the core truths of the gospel as expressed in the Urantia book around the theme of a way of life and spiritual family, what that way of life is like and how it touches people and transforms people, transforms our lives, and really ideally acts as a transformative force in the broader culture as well, in our movement and in the broader culture, to be in these family relationships with God and with each other. So we're going to be focusing on leadership and the development of leadership in a variety of modalities in the Family Way Forum, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 11:30. It's going to be at the same Zoom link as Homecoming on Sundays. So that's the essentials of it. The last thing I want to share is really what this is about for me is the nurturing and the development of culture, spiritual, symbolic culture, in a number of venues or levels. And I'll share this passage. It's from 101, Section 8, Paragraph 1. And the synopsis for me, which is short enough for me to carry around with me, is faith shapes and dominates the mode of living. faith shapes and dominates the mode of living. And the fuller passage at 101.8.1 goes like this. It says belief, it's really an interesting passage. It says belief has attained the level of faith when it motivates life and shapes the mode of living. The acceptance of the teaching as true is not faith. That is mere belief. Neither is certainty nor conviction faith. Now that's interesting. Neither is certainty nor conviction faith. And then they make this statement. They say, a state of mind attains to faith levels only when it actually dominates the mode of living. So what we have faith in, if it's really faith, begins to shape and dominate the way we live, right? It begins to form and culture the thoughts we have, the emotions we have, what's going on in our inner environment, moment to moment, day in, day out. And it begins to shape and flavor the way we move in the world and how we relate to each other, our relationships. So this phenomenon of culture is a personal experience. We form a personal culture, a way of life for ourselves around our spiritual, central spiritual precepts in our life. And it begins to shape the way we function as groups in the Arantra movement, in our study groups, in our relationships with each other. And if we're doing our job right, it begins to overflow out of our Urantia movement culture into the culture at large and begins slowly over generations to uplift and shape the culture of the planet, the world. And that's what we have to be about here. What the revelators say is our mission. You know, it's spiritual and cultural uplift and transformation. So in our personal lives, in our group relationships, and in the broader culture. So that's what homecoming is about, right? It's about having a space on a regular basis and a family way forum. It's about having these places where we gather and we steep ourselves in the central spiritual truths of the revelation. And I'll just share what those are, what we're focusing on in the first 10 weeks of homecoming. On those Sundays, first 10 Sundays, is it's called the Family Way, a way of life in the family of God. It's a roadmap to an actual way of life. And the core spiritual truths we'll be focusing on week by week are the spiritual parent-child relationship, the spiritual sister-brother relationship that we have with each other, the indwelling spirit, the intimacy of our relationship with God, the will of God, the reality that our lives are shaped and patterned by God's wishes and hopes for us, and how we can bring that more to bear in our lives. So the will of God, love, the central energy of love in God's spiritual family. The eternal life is the sixth central truth, and then faith, and how faith motivates and shapes our lives. So those are the themes that we're going to be looking at week in, week out for those first 10 weeks. And then we'll see where we go from there. So wow. I just want to extend a warm invitation, to everyone to participate who wants to. And Andre, I think you were going to see if we could, you could have a URL.
Absolutely.
Or
I've got that for
it.
You.
Yeah.
And that's simply at go to the UrantiaUniversity.org website, and that's Urantia University, that's URANTIA, for any of you unfamiliar with the spelling of that term. And it's one word, university, following that, UNIVERSITY, UrantiaUniversity.org/ homecoming, and that's just HOMECOMING. If you go to that page, what's wonderful is it'll tell you something about that when it is 11 to 12:30 p.m. Mountain Time, and the other times in a number of other time zones, And then it has information right below it to join. The Zoom link is included in every edition of the UUI This Week email. And if you aren't on UUI's email list, contact admin@urantiauniversity.org. That's right there on that page. Or sign up using this form, and there's a link to the form. And then you can go down and some of the things that Marvin was talking about are recapitulated there on the page. So you can find out all about it and share it with your friends as well. For anybody, and my understanding, again, Marvin, is that this is for people in any walk of faith. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. What we're really hoping to do is grow over time a large audience on Zoom, and initially it's likely to be largely comprised of your Rancho Book readers, but what we're asking people to do seriously, and I'll be asking them every week to do this, is, you know, think of people you know, spiritual seekers who are not readers of the text. And family members, friends, anyone you know who might have any interest in the spiritual life, and invite them to show up on Sunday mornings to homecoming. And what we're going to be using language and an approach that is very friendly to both a UB reading audience and a non-Urantia Book reading audience. So Elizabeth and I are committed to that. And we want to grow this, what we're calling a hybrid audience. So, that's the hope, and we'd love it if you come show up and see what it's about.
Yeah, wonderful. And is this, by the way, is this every week or every second week? How often are you meeting?
Well, that's the aspiration here. So we're planning to meet every Sunday morning, ongoing.
Okay.
So it's a weekly, it's a space weekly where people could enjoy community and enjoy relationships with each other and be inspired to a way of life and spiritual family relationships with God and with each other. So that's the hope.
Very good. And I see on that homecoming page, as you scroll down, it talks about your Family Way Forum that will be starting February 2nd.
And that is
on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 a.m. PST. Did you say anything about that yet?
I'll say it just a little more. It's associated with homecoming, and I'll be talking about that on the Sunday mornings at homecoming as part of the housekeeping segment.
Okay.
And that date is wrong, by the way. We do have to correct it. That first Thursday is February 1st. So it's not February 1st.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also an hour and a half on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And the idea here is, of the people that participate in homecoming and in the movement as a whole, there's quite a bit of momentum these days for the development and the training of teachers and leaders and people who feel called to ministry and spiritual outreach. And so the Family Way Forum is a conversation space and a space for mentoring and mutual support for anyone who feels called to develop themselves, to equip themselves, to share the gospel, the central spiritual truths of the gospel, in any fashion to any audience. And we will be focusing on, a way of life and spiritual family is the core explication of that. But it'll be open and supportive to anyone who feels moved to do spiritual uplift work with the central truths of the revelation, however they configure that. So that's the purpose there.
Wonderful. This sounds like a wonderful service, and not only that, just going to be a wonderful time of fellowship and a growing cohort from not just the Urantia Book readership, but people that are coming from all faith walks. Wonderful. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. And again, you can learn more about that at urantiauniversity.org. That's urantiauniversity.org/ homecoming, one word, HOMECOMING. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us, Marvin.
You know, a pleasure.
So,
thank you.
You bet. And let's now move on to our study of the infinite spirit. And I'm going to suggest that we just, let's read the intro, prime the pump, and begin our discussion on the other side. Does that sound good? And I think we've got Pam. There you are, Pam. Who would like to read that first intro section?
I can read
it. Paper eight.
It's
right?
Paper
the
eight.
Spirit.
And the intro section, or as we are want to call in our standard reference, the zero section.
anyway, I don't mind.
Just four paragraphs. Who would like to read it?
I don't mind.
Okay, very good, Chuck.
Can you hear me?
Thank you. Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Cool. Great.
We'll go ahead and mute and take it away.
All right. So here we're diving into the person of the Trinity, having already studied the Father and the Eternal Son. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how all this fits together.
Yeah.
Anyway, so starting, so let's see. This is the intro section, right? Back in eternity, you can imagine such a thing. Back in eternity, when the Universal Father's, quote, first infinite and absolute thought finds in the Eternal Son such a perfect and adequate word for its divine expression, there ensues the supreme desire of both the thought God, Father, and the word God, the Eternal Son, for a universal and infinite agent of mutual expression and combined action. So that's a really interesting concept we can pull apart, I'm sure, today. In the dawn of eternity, okay, back in eternity, the Father and the Son were deciding they needed an agent to be their mutual representative. Okay, now they're saying in the dawn of eternity, both the Father and the Son become infinitely cognizant of their mutual interdependence, their eternal and absolute oneness. And therefore, do they enter into an infinite and everlasting covenant of divine partnership. This never-ending compact is made for the execution of their united concepts throughout all of the circle of eternity, And ever since this eternity event, the Father and the Son continue in this divine union. We are now face to face with the eternity origin of the infinite spirit, the third person of deity. The very instant that God the Father and God the Son conjointly conceive an identical and infinite action, the execution of an absolute thought plan, that very moment, the infinite spirit springs full-fledgedly into existence. And thus reciting, because the spirit is representing both, and thus reciting the order of the origin of the deities, I do so merely to enable you to think of their relationship. In reality, they are all three existent from eternity. They are existential. That's what that word means, existential. Never beginning, never ending. They are without beginning or ending of days. They are coordinate, supreme, ultimate, absolute, and infinite. They are and always have been and ever shall be. Those three things. Anyway, we can come back to that. And they are three basically distinct, individualized, but eternally associated persons. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit.
Thank you very much, Chuck. What a wonderful four-paragraph synopsis of the infinite spirit. And I can't tell you how important this was for me as a coming full circle in some of the questions that I had in my youth growing up as, you know, a Roman Catholic young lad, you know, being taught about the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And, you know,
the Holy Ghost,
sometimes referred to it in mm-hmm. those days as the Holy Spirit, and these days more often so than the Holy Ghost. But that was, you know, I never quite got the symbology. Why a dove? Why do they symbolize the third person as a dove? And how come we know so little about the third person if they're equal in the Trinity as we're being taught? And they're three persons in one God, which was a novel and a very interesting teaching in Christianity in general, but it came through Roman Catholicism to begin with. That whole idea was presenting the idea of three equal persons in one deity, in one Godhead, in a number of different, you know, ways of placing that. There is more about the infinite spirit in these four paragraphs than I learned in my first 20 years in Catholicism. Well, actually, I have to say I kind of dropped out. I was already starting my search for truth, you know, much earlier than that, and dropped away from Catholicism by the time I was 14. But paid attention to these teachings were very important to me. And I had that curiosity question in the back of my mind and never thought that I would get an answer to it. And then I found the Urantia book. And here we have more about the infinite spirit and actually a cogent kind of explanation of what the infinite spirit, who he is, and mm-hmm. what he does. And what he's responsible mm-hmm. for in eternity. So your thoughts on what these four simple paragraphs are telling us to introduce the third person of deity to us. Anyone?
Mm. Well, Andre, my immediate reaction was what I have heard in my circles of discussing theology. And because of the fact that the Trinity has always been an elusive concept over the years, mm-hmm. it has put the idea of the Trinity has been reduced to two guys and a bird.
Sounds about right.
Two guys and a bird.
Two guys and
yeah.
a bird, yes.
yeah.
So, I mean, there's your dove, right? There's your dove. But
right.
Yeah. And so, I'm sorry, I don't have anything more intelligent to offer other than that right now.
but yeah. I mean, that's you were struck the same way that I was. It was like, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
You know.
yeah. We are spoiled.
You know, inquiring minds want to know. And you know what? We grew up around very few inquiring minds. That was as astonishing to me as anything else, is that don't you other people have these mm-hmm. questions like I do? You know, because that was always a question for me. You know, we had all this information about Jesus, right? The second person of Trinity, you know, according to Christianity. They conflated him with the Eternal Son, which we've just gotten done studying. But, and then of course he referred to the Father, so we knew more about the Father. But yeah, this guy of two guys and a bird. Well, we know that bird was a symbol. Yeah. But go ahead, Chuck.
Well, sometimes it's a ghost. Sometimes it's a ghost. We got a ghost bird. That always freaked me out when I was a kid. What's all this business about a ghost?
Right.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Because
a holy ghost.
Well, a holy ghost. Then it gets really twisted. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I think one of the most interesting things about the Trinity concept, maybe, or at least what we're just reading about here, is how the three, of course, are perfectly unified. And you brought this up a second ago, too, Andre.
Mm-hmm.
But then they say there are three distinctly individualized but eternally
mm-hmm.
associated persons.
Mm-hmm.
So there's individuality and personality, and at the same time you have unfathomable—that's not the right word—but unity that's beyond anything we can conceive. I mean, they're so perfectly unified they can be referred to as one.
Mm-hmm.
But yet at the same time, there's three distinctly individualized. So this kind of reminds me of, you know, in the book where they talk about how deity, the ministry of deity is always unified. And that, you know, on all levels of our ascension through God the Sevenfold, that's going to be our experience. But yet at the same time, they tell us about all these beings who are going to participate in that. And then they start looking like very distinct individuals, like Michael, for example. Or
mm-hmm.
know, many others. So this combination of individualization and overarching, sort of impenetrable, maybe is a better way, impenetrable unity.
Mm-hmm.
There's no flaw in the unity, so it all looks like one. But yet within that, there are all these distinct individuals. And if I'm
mm-hmm.
not mistaken, we're invited to have relationships with these individual deity figures. I mean, certainly Michael, Jesus, he gave us a beautiful invitation, you know, when he stands at the door and knocks. I mean, he's seeking a personal relationship. And assume the same, we'll experience the same with these three persons of the Trinity. So kind of sorting that out, you know, how you can have this distinct individuality, but yet this overarching unity at the same time. Yeah, but I think that's part of what moves us along in our ascension is the fact that we're getting the same message all the way. Different message from Michael than we'll get from the Ancients of Days or from the Supreme.
Right.
It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's a unity of,
right.
of ministry
yes,
from all of them,
facet.
But yet there are these distinct differences. So I wonder how you guys sort that out.
Like facets. Yeah.
Like
yeah,
facets.
Well, and you know,
exactly.
giving us the story of you know how the sun came into being, and
mm-hmm.
and then you know they bring to into existence the third person, although we're told that this is an eternity event, it never happened. Beyond, it never happened in time. It never happened in any kind of a sequence that one was truly temporally before another one. They've always existed. But they have that source relationship. And we're told with the sun that effectively the sun that we've studied over the last few weeks, the sun is reflective completely of the Father. In fact, even almost more so reflective of the Father's nature than the Father that you can find out directly from the Father himself, because expressing those spiritual aspects of the Father, divested of all the material and non-personal aspects that went into the making of non-personal energetic paradise. And so there's paradise and the sun that allow that to occur. And then the sun and the Father come up with a unified concept of who their agent of action is going to be, their person that gets things done, that takes their thought and expression and puts it into action. So all of that's kind of a fascinating portrayal of something that happened but never occurred in time. Additional thoughts?
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
I'm kind of reviewing what the original plan was between the Father and the Son, and it looks like paper 7, section 4, point 4 is the plan of progressive attainment. So it says the Universal Father's plan of evolutionary ascension, a program unreservedly accepted by the Eternal Son when he concurred in the Father's proposal, quote, let us make mortal creatures in our own image. So it sounds like that was the first utterance of a plan. This provision, upsetting the creatures of time, involves Father's bestowal of the thought gestures and personality. And then second, number two, is the bestowal plan. The next universal plan is the Great Father Revelation Enterprise of the Eternal Son. And that's to go into the evolutionary creatures, creations, incarnate and make real. And so... And then I guess out of that is three, the plan of mercy ministry. And that would be when the infinite spirit comes into the picture. That, like you say, the action principle takes precedence. So, yeah, I was curious about what that original plan was. And that seems to break it out. So now we're talking about that action aspect of the Trinity plan.
Well, and you know, there's a whole infinite plan, and they all know it.
Yes.
And they
can't
reveal very much of it to us.
No, that's for sure.
But that's as much as they definitely can reveal to us. Go ahead, Chuck.
I was just going to say there's a pattern here, intriguingly repeated in our own ascension, potentially, where they talk about Trinitization. I'll just read this one paragraph from paper 22, where they say, and this sounds almost exactly like what they just said about the Trinity. They say it's two mortal finalities on going before the architects of the master universe, demonstrate that they have independently chosen an identical concept for Trinitization. The architects are empowered on their own discretion to promulgate mandates permitting these glorified mortal ascenders to extend their recess and to remove themselves for a time to the Trinitizing sector of the paradise citizens. At the end of this assigned retreat, if they report that they have singly and jointly elected to make the paradisiacal effort to spiritualize, idealize, and actualize a selected and original concept which has not theretofore been trinitized, then does the Master Spirit number 7 issue orders authorizing such an extraordinary undertaking? Unbelievably long periods of time are sometimes consumed in these adventures. An age seems to pass before these faithful and determined one-time mortals, and sometimes paradise of own personalities, finally achieve their goal, really succeed in bringing their chosen concept of universal truth into actual being. So doesn't that sound similar?
It does actually, in some respects.
Oh, yeah.
There's that idea of coming up with an identical plan independently. What?
You know where else that comes up is in the creation of Creator Sons. Isn't there a similar thing that goes on there, where the Father and the Eternal Son once again get the same idea at the same time, and then it personalizes as a Creator Son. I think that's how that works.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, that's that is true.
Probably.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So I mean, you could say that they are also trinitizing, because that concept is an absolute concept, and you know we keep thinking in terms of creation that the persons of deity are creating, and indeed they probably do create some, you know, finite creatures. Well, in fact, we're going to see that the infinite spirit en masse is responsible for the creation of all that occurred in Havona, both the worlds and all the peoples on those worlds, all in one fell swoop. Again, something that never happened in time, that has always existed, that is just blows out any kind of finite conception that we can have, which is all that we can have. We can't imagine anything that didn't begin.
Yeah. Just flat flashed into existence.
Yeah, right. You know, if it happened in time, that's how it would appear to us, but it never happened. So you can't find a time where Havona did not exist. So the interesting thing with regard to the Creator Sons, and you know, we're told that they, you know, there's a serial that, you know, our Michael is the 611,121st to come into being. Still, that was a unique and only begotten concept, we're told, and it's an absolute concept that has been personified, that is completely unique both in personality and in nature of that Creator Son. That sounds an awful lot like trinitization, except that the trinitizing mortals aren't coming up with anything that is absolute. They're coming up with simply a concept. And in general, for former material mortals, it's a concept having to do with the material reality or the energy reality or the physical reality, however you want to look at it, of the universe. Only when mortals essay to do this with Paradise Havoners do they come up with a new mind reality that has actually no bearing even on the next universe age and gets paired up with a solitary messenger and goes to Vice Gerrington with that new being to ready them for something way in the future. That's completely a mystery. It's only the Paradise of Owners that when they get together to trinitize, actually trinitize concepts that have to do with some kind of major spiritual concept. And that's all curious. Mm-hmm. It says something about how important our having had our genesis in a material life really is, that we can have concepts develop clearly through the entirety of our ascension that are going to be important enough to trinitize.
Yes, this whole thing brings to me the whole nature of potentiality in our journey. In other words, the idea of coming up with a brand new concept. Now, it's like that doesn't mean it's a new concept to the Trinity, does it? It couldn't possibly be.
No.
But it's but it must be really, really deep inside the Trinity that it has not been obvious in the journey up to that point. It's like a deeper dive into an aspect of that Trinitarian reality that is a part of the eternal future that is being discovered ahead of time in a way. I don't know. It's I love the mystery of this whole thing, and
I agree with you. I agree with you, and it's really it's a wonderful analogy. It's like you know, when we were growing up, all of us, and, you know, not to date us too much, but, you know, we grew up where in history, the whole notion of new lands to be discovered was still fairly recent history over the last few hundred years, where the continent of North America was virtually unknown in 1492. You know, it was only discovered. You know, Antarctica was only explored in, you know, the times of the early, the late 19th and early 20th century, those ideas had come up to go to the poles. And then, you know, looking at the oceans and that kind of thing. I bring that up because your idea brings up the idea of, in the same way that we have humanly had in our history undiscovered countries, these concepts, in many respects, in the universe are undiscovered countries that if we happen upon them and happen upon them with somebody else, we might actually try to trinitize them and actually bring them into being in such a way that there's a new value in the universe and some serviceable creature trinitized person that is going to be useful throughout all eternity.
You know,
so, I mean, that's a fascinating concept, isn't it? Go ahead, Mark.
What it reminds me of is, which is really kind of an interesting phenomenon, is, you know, we all read this text, and yet each of us with these different minds and different personalities often will focus in on things that uniquely appeal to us, that resonate for us, you know, and that we want to find a way to give expression to in our lives. And that's always fascinated me about the Urantia book. It doesn't result in a lot of conformity or a lot of just saying yes to simple propositions. People really have their own individual reactions and often very novel and creative. For instance, I mean, a lot of our conversation here in Cosmic Citizen, it's always interesting to me the directions that people will take a passage in. And that to me is part of what I find so stimulating about the text and about our reactions to it. And so that was one thought. The other thought is, going back to the Trinity and what the Trinity is as a foundational phenomenon in the cosmos, right? I mean, the I Am existed, but nothing else had happened. When we think about this sequentially, which is a nod to our finite nature, right? I mean, because these things are not sequential. The Trinity has always existed in these relationships. The universes of time and space are sequential. We are sequential. We follow one thing, follows another. But they're describing it this way to us as a compromise, a gift to us so that we can understand it. But in essence, the I Am has always existed as the Trinity and as a set of relationships. And what strikes me about this description is that in God's fundamental nature, from the beginning of anything, God has always been relational, right? God has always manifested as a set of living relationships between a creator being, a being that conceptualizes a reality and then gives birth to it as a created being, the eternal Son, the first created deity being. So there's a deity that is, in essence, a creator, and a deity that is, in essence, a created person, and then they together co-create a third person. And so in the Trinity, you have all the vectors of relationship in the spiritual family, the original spiritual family, and this is paradigmatic for all of reality. You know, what the Trinity says to me is the whole nature of existence is A, personal. It's the creation and existence of persons, and it is relational, right? It's all about our interactions with God and with each other, and that is the model for all of reality, that God has always been and always will be. And that this stage of universe existence is one where God has placed us down at the very bottom of spiritual reality, where there's almost no spiritual reality at all in the animal kingdom, right? And he's basically said, I want you to do what we in the Trinity have done, is to be in relationship with your Creator and with each other as fraternal and sororal beings. And I want you to go forward from this bottom level of existence and climb all the way up to the place where you can encounter the three of us as the original persons in this Trinity relationship. And so it's profoundly relational. The whole thing is a set of living relationships where love is the dominant phenomenon occurring in different ways, and growth and emergence. So it's fascinating. The Trinity is fascinating to me as the embodiment of what we're all about here in this whole endeavor. They're putting out a model for what we're moving toward, what the whole thing is. The whole dance is about this to me.
Exactly. Richard Rohr's book is called The Divine Dance, his book on Trinity, because it is relational. It is an exchange of those three beings. And it's also interesting to think that we do not really, other than maybe getting to know the Father personally, that maybe we don't really know them individually very much. It's not until we get closer that we actually have to study each one individually to learn about them. I mean, we just have a shadow right now, a soup in a way. I mean, I don't know. I find myself intellectualizing about who they are individually, and you know, the strive to feel the presence of each one is a challenge for me, and I think that it's going to be a challenge for a long, long time along this journey. But it is relational.
Yeah, there's a series of stages here, and I think this is the whole universe plan is they have downstepped these relationships to the level of the local universe in the person of the Creator Son, who is an embodiment both of the Father and the Son. He's both a creator being and a created person, and in his relationship with the Universe Mother Spirit, the vectors of relationship in the Trinity are downstepped and expressed in who they are and their relationship with each other and their relationship with us, so we can begin to touch this experience of relational existence through Jesus and the Mother Spirit. So it begins down here at that level, which is gorgeous, you know, that they offer us that opportunity. Yeah.
And in these papers, we're going to find out, you know, the various degrees of that ministry, you know, how it's expressed in its many, many ways of angels and reflectivity and all of that. This is going to be a really exciting journey as we get into this concept of the third person of Trinity.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should go on, read on.
I think we should. There's just, you know, that's been a great introduction. Pam, would you like to read the next part?
Or would you prefer
somebody else?
I'll take a few paragraphs.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Okay. Section one, the God of action. In the eternity of the past, upon the personalization of the infinite spirit, the divine personality cycle becomes perfect and complete. The God of action is existent, and the vast stage of space is set for the stupendous drama of creation, the universal adventure, the divine panorama of the eternal ages. The act of the infinite spirit is the inspection and recognition of his divine parents, the Father, Father, and the Mother, Son. He, the Spirit, unqualifiedly identifies both of them. He is fully cognizant of their separate personalities and infinite attributes, as well as of their combined nature and united function. Next, voluntarily, with transcendent willingness and inspiring spontaneity, the third person of deity, notwithstanding his equality with the first and second persons, pledges eternal loyalty to God the Father and acknowledges everlasting dependence upon God the Son. Inherent in the nature of this transaction and in mutual recognition of the personality independence of each and the execution, and the executive union of all three, the cycle of eternity is established. The Paradise Trinity is existent. The stage of universal space is set for the manifold and never-ending panorama of the creative unfolding of the purpose of the Universal Father through the personality of the Eternal Son and by the execution of the God of Action, the executive agency for the reality performances of the Father-Son-Creator partnership. Oh, wow, reality performances. Oh, da-da-da-da. The God of Action functions and the dead vaults of space are astir. All right, Gary, what would you do with this? 1 billion perfect spheres flash into existence. Prior to this hypothetical eternity moment, the space energies inherent in paradise are existent and potentially operative, but they have no actuality of being. Neither can physical gravity be measured except by the reaction of material realities to its incessant pull. There is no material universe at this assumed eternally distant moment. But the very instant that 1 billion worlds materialize, there is in evidence gravity sufficient and adequate to hold them in the everlasting grasp of paradise. There now flashes through the creation of the gods the second form of energy. This outflowing spirit is instantly grasped by the spiritual gravity of the Eternal Son. The twofold gravity embraced universe is touched with the eternity of infinity, with the energy of infinity, and immersed in the spirit of divinity. In this way is the soil of life prepared for the consciousness of mind made manifest in the associated intelligence circuits of the infinite spirit. Upon these seeds of potential existence, diffused throughout the central creation of the gods, the Father acts and creature personality appears. Then does the presence of the paradise deities fill all organized space and begin effectively to draw all things and beings paradiseward. The infinite spirit eternalizes concurrently with the birth of the Havona worlds, this central universe being created by him and with him and in him in obedience to the combined concepts and united wills of the Father and Son. The third person deitizes by this very act of conjoint creation, and he thus forever becomes the conjoint creator. These are the grand and awful times of the creative expansion of the Father and the Son by and in the action of their conjoint associate and exclusive executive, the third source and center. There exists no record of these stirring times. We have only the meager disclosures of the Infinite Spirit to substantiate these mighty transactions, and he merely verifies the fact that the central universe and all that pertains thereto eternalized simultaneously with his attainment of personality and conscious existence. Wow. Hmm. In brief, the Infinite Spirit testifies that since he is eternal, so also is the central universe eternal. And this is the traditional starting point of the history of the universe, of universes. Absolutely nothing is known and no records are in existence regarding any event or transaction prior to this stupendous eruption of creative energy and administrative wisdom that crystallized the vast universe which exists and so exquisitely functions at the center of all things. Beyond this event lie the unsearchable transactions of eternity and the depths of infinity. Absolute mystery.
Wow.
And we thus portray the
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, I know. It's like
what a symphony of words.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And we thus portray the sequential origin of the third source and center as an interpretive condescension to the time bound and space conditioned mind of mortal creatures. Thank you very much. The mind of man must have a starting point for the visualization of universe history. And I have been directed to provide this technique of approach to the historic concept of eternity. In the material mind, consistency demands a first cause. Therefore, do we postulate the universal Father as the first source and the absolute center of all creation. At the same time, instructing all creature minds that the Son and the Spirit are co-eternal with the Father in all phases of universe history and in all realms of creative activity. And we do this without in any sense being disregardful of the reality and eternity of the Isle of Paradise and of the unqualified, universal, and deity absolutes. It is enough of a reach of the material mind of the children of time to conceive of the Father in eternity. We know that any child can best relate himself to reality by first mastering the relationship of the child-parent situation, and then by enlarging this concept to embrace the family as a whole. Subsequently, the growing mind of the child will be able to adjust to the concept of family relations, to relationships of the community, the race, and the world, and then to those of the universe, the super universe, and even the universe of universes.
Wow. Thank you. What a lovely personal reading you did of this section. And I love the fact that your reactions sort of underscore normal human psychological reactions to some of these things that they're trying to teach us. Goodness gracious. Wonderfully done.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Well, you know, what comes to mind, too, is we were talking about this earlier, the idea of what was in the plan, let's see, what we were talking about, the plan of trinitization and, concepts that have never been understood as a trinitization character. And it's like our very Urantia revelation is an entirely new concept on this planet. So you were talking about going out to different countries, you know, discovering new countries. And,
right.
And it's like our Urantia Revelation is an entirely new country of concept on this planet that, that we are embracing, you know, wholeheartedly, and some, and we're trying desperately to share with others to let them know the world is round and there is a country over there. In fact, it's right here. It's right here.
Yeah.
So, and then this question just spells out the mystery, the beautiful mystery of it all.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy. Potential. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah. There's something about this story that strikes me as now, Pam, you've just been reading it. This is kind of a story they're telling us, you know, with all the compromises that are necessary to make it comprehensible.
Yeah.
But if you think about evolution, which is a process of emergence or creation that we're more familiar with, there's an emergence of complication, an emergence of detail. You know, you sort of start with a formless mass, and then all of a sudden things start to appear, and pretty soon you got this immensely complex, you know, like life on a planet, for example, how that starts, but then what it develops into. So there's an emergence of complexity that we're familiar with from observing evolution, let's say, even in our own lives. You know, as we get older, we can do more complicated things. So there's this emergence, again, of complexity. But with this story, that's missing. Everything just comes into existence full-blown. I mean, think about the Havona, the central universe, and all the beings on all those worlds, and all the infrastructure, for want of a better word,
right,
everything that makes that possible. And just and that's just the beginning. There's just huge complexity of manifestation that just seems to happen somehow. I mean, it doesn't go through, they don't send out, you know, it's not like creating the architectural worlds, you know, where they tell us how long it takes to build them and, you know, and all that. There's no mention of anything like that with the central universe. It just, I guess, like they said, it flashes into existence. So that, I wonder what that means or what that says about the nature of God or something, that there's this capacity to hold complexity and potential. And maybe that be involved the absolute somehow, I don't know. But then have it just spring full-blown into existence without any sequential process.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the idea that there could be thought.
For what?
That there could be thought on that level. I mean, we're used to human thought, which has to be cobbled together, has to start somewhere, has to consider all kinds of other things. Well, if we have that, then we've got to have that. Well, if we have those two things, then we better have that third thing, and on and on and on. There's this evolutionary development to everything that we do. There's a beginning and there's a culmination after some
rabbit
development.
It's true of everything.
And here we have, we're being told and we're being asked to conceive of an infinite being who, by virtue of coming into existence with an infinite mind, a mind that encompasses all other minds that ever will be, that mind is capable of conceiving of an original universe that has an eternity existence, that has everything it needs repletely in order to be the perfect universe of expression of the three deities for all eternity. Now, that's just beyond our concept of how that could possibly be. If we could see a building flash into existence, we would be astounded.
Right.
And if it should be a perfect building, that flashes into existence. We would be awestruck.
I love the in brief idea.
In brief,
you know, is this traditional starting point of the history of the universes, you know. No records. Stupendous eruption of creative energy. And it's like, oh my gosh. Talk about appreciating mystery. I mean, if this doesn't get you there, well, nothing will. Andre, you're probably on the point of making a point, and I just...
I think we're all making the same point. It's this idea of how do you wrap your mind around, I mean, even one world coming into being, you know, in one part of a world, a continent on a world. How do you wrap your mind around each of these billion worlds being an original creation as well, we're told, elsewhere? Each one is original. They're not copies. But not only that, they come into being with a perfect administrator, eternal of days, someone that is on the order of one of the ancients of days, but one of these for each of these Havona worlds, that has always existed, that has always been administering that world. What? And then all the creatures, all the material, you know, what do they call the Havona natives are effectively, quote unquote, the material creatures of Havona, but it's of Havona material, and these beings are, we would probably be hard-pressed in our present state to think of them as either material or finite, or, I mean, even though apparently they are finite, what do you think of a finite being that's existed eternally? What?
What? Yeah, well, we're not there yet. We're going to explore that in the next couple of weeks, right?
That'll be coming up. That'll be coming up eventually, yes.
One mystery at a time.
One mystery at a time, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Well, we could tackle this a paragraph at a time, or we can jump around a little bit over the next 20 or 40 minutes that we have. In the eternity of the past. Go ahead, if you'd like to, Chuck.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to comment on the language. I mean, I'm just stunned by the language in this section. You know, if you think about a script, you know, you mentioned trying to visualize this. Like this, I got to read this one paragraph again. It's just too good. Or they say, this is the in brief paragraph.
Yes.
The Infinite Spirit testifies that since he is eternal, so also is the central universe eternal. And this is a traditional starting point of the history of the universe of universes. Yes. Absolutely nothing is known, and no records are in existence regarding any event or transaction prior to this stupendous eruption of creative energy and administrative wisdom that crystallized the vast universe which exists so exquisitely functions at the center of all things. Beyond this event lie the unsearchable transactions of eternity and the depths of infinity, absolute mystery. So I'm sure they're very serious about their record keeping. On paradise.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the universe. But there's no records. I mean, that alone is such a fascinating idea, that you have this manifest existence of incredible quantities of stuff, but there are no records.
Right.
Because
how could you have had a record of something
right
of which uh-huh. you're trying to record by virtue of what beings would you have recorded that other than
yeah, right.
whoever was on yeah. paradise? But that may be another conundrum. That may be trying to get us to think about something about the nature of paradise, because paradise in eternity pre-exists Havona. And even the 21
yeah.
sacred spheres.
Conceptually.
Well, not conceptually.
Mm-hmm.
They are co-eternal, yes. But some things are more eternal than others, we're told in the Urantia book.
Some things are more eternal. Yeah, some things are more infinite.
I love it.
We have to make that little
yeah.
compromise.
Uh-huh.
Well,
I don't know. It's like all the parts are in place. As soon as it exists, all the parts are in place. Everything's functioning mm-hmm. like a well-oiled machine.
Right. So, Pam, you were going to make a comment. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. In listen to an interesting discussion with Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris, who is an atheist. And it was a really good conversation. And it always gets me wondering how atheists can be content with denying a creator. In other words, they don't want to become fools. They don't want to believe in supernatural fluff is
mm-hmm.
kind of at the base. Mm-hmm. You know, that would embarrass them. And yet this one statement jumped out at me under 8.1.10, and it says, in the material mind, consistency demands a first cause.
Mm-hmm.
And so does that mean that the atheist's mind is not, they're not being consistent? Where is their first cause if they don't
believe in a
creator?
They have the big bang, right?
Yeah, but
right.
that's a result. That's not a cause. That's
right.
a result
okay.
of some action.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they try to bottle it all up together. In a certain sense, the Big Bang is a chaotic version of what we've just been presented. You know,
yeah,
what we're being presented with Havona having an eternal existence, but having an inception in the mind of the infinite spirit, but being co-eternal with that spirit, and everything having been ordered and perfect from eternity. We're being told with the Big Bang that this was in time, it was random, it was from one point, and as far as, because it's enshrouded in mystery, it's uncaused. Now, this is the thing that's always interesting with regard to physicists and how brilliant these physicists are, and yet somehow they're willing at the beginning of the Big Bang with the singularity to indicate that, yes, we know it happened. They're effectively almost invoking eventuation. It eventuated that the singularity banged.
Yes.
But there's no first cause that would do that, even though in Newton's first laws, everything in motion tends to remain in motion. Everything at rest tends to remain at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. What is the outside force that gets the singularity, you know, to bang?
Exactly. And that's my question, is the eternal universe, the Havona universe is eternal. But there was a point after that where time-space was initiated. That's where the Big Bang took place. when the evolutionary universes came into existence.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But even those,
well,
even
be
those,
a lot of,
bang.
Be a lot of bang. A lot
yeah.
of bang. Or a lot of bangs.
Yeah.
Because that's the, because, you know, in talking about Havona, that is eternity. That is not time. So the Big
mm-hmm.
Bang happened after the creation, the eternal creation.
Right.
In,
on the
in,
other hand,
as
though.
As a part of the plan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, getting into time and space, yeah. But they do use
yeah.
this language here. They say, they talk about a stupendous eruption of creative energy. I mean, that sounds a little bit like a big
yeah.
thing. I mean,
right.
not really, but
well,
language-wise,
yeah.
probably the closest phrase. A stupendous eruption. But it's not talking about a bunch of stuff. It's talking about creative energy and administrative wisdom. It's crystallized
yeah.
the vast universe which exists.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's a
okay.
whole level of reality that the big bangers never even think about. You know,
right.
Who's gonna administer this? You know, they don't think about that. Or who's
mm-hmm.
behind it?
Yeah.
You know? There's a who involved, not just an it.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a
fascinating they resist that subject. With all their might.
Well, yeah.
Well,
it's. Because
even though
they
are a who themselves,
well,
yeah,
and there's this
denying,
element.
They're denying their own creativity, you know.
Yeah, something
in,
like that.
In denying
mm-hmm.
a creator force, you know. They're denying personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's,
yeah.
That's always a fun thing to get logical about is, you know, how can you be a personal
mm-hmm.
being? You know, if there isn't the original source of that, you know. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and so some of what's really fascinating with all of this is that they're really the thing that is underlying so much of what we're being taught about, particularly in part one, but right from the get-go, is that persons are behind every act of creation, that there is an author, a scientist, an artist, a philosopher, even religionist, someone personal behind every reality that there could possibly be. And here it's being underscored. Havona doesn't exist except for the infinite spirit. Paradise doesn't exist except for the universal father. And his first act in differentiating paradise from the eternal sun. And, you know, this is a very interesting idea. And then because we can't pin anything to what we see scientifically, we can't attribute persons to what's happening. Scientifically, we have to try to come up with explanations. And because people have different ideas and we're an isolated world, those ideas can range from the theistic to the atheistic, and some combinations of those even in some cases.
Materialistic, yeah.
Yeah.
Like matter-based as opposed
and
to
so,
personality-based, yeah.
Yeah. And how do you, and so we have these uncausally related kinds of things, even though a lot of physics, there's this intricate interrelatedness that, and elegance, as Einstein and others would put it, you know, to the universe. Wherefore this design and this elegance without some designer behind this elegance?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
architect.
We're being given this view that whether you can see it or not, you must assume that there was a person behind it in order to truly appreciate what is there and to actually learn about in the fullness what that reality is. In order to really understand material reality at bottom, we have to understand that there are persons that are responsible for personal reality. And that's something that has yet to dawn on, say, mankind as a whole. It certainly hasn't dawned. I mean, that goes on to religionists as well, because the ideas, the cosmologies that the religions of the world have come up with are largely symbolic, mythologic, and frankly, simple and not helpful in terms of showing our relationship to the gods and to reality and bringing it all together until, of course, here with the Urantia book, which is why they present it at the beginning here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at some point in the book it talks about how early man and even present day, I would assume, will come up with some kind of concept because we need a frame to work within. And so that frame may be false, but it may be temporary. And we have to appreciate that it is temporary, that it is only scaffolding. And instead of being dogmatic about it, you know, that's part of our challenge. I mean, there's, you know, theocratic dogmatism, and then there's scientific dogmatism. It's just as that. It's a matter, and that's kind of where we get this whole Trinity function. It's like parts of our understanding are trinitized. We need to be able to put them in these different categories, and we're not complete unless we can, you know, put the personal where the personal goes and the materialistic where that goes. And without being dogmatic.
Go ahead, Chuck.
All right. Well, trinitizing is a way of producing super additive outcomes, which is a huge thing all through the book, you know, sort of between the lines maybe, but it comes out specifically here and there. So what you're talking about, Sam, is something we all engage in without probably even realizing it, you know, when we work together with another person, for example. It's possible to create things that neither person could do alone, you know, and that's kind of, I think that's legitimately called the super additive outcome. It's more than the sum of the parts. So that's the same exact thing that happens with trinitization. You know, you get these two ascending mortals and say, hey, you got that same idea, you know, and they hook that up and try and make that happen. But it requires the embrace of the Trinity, right, to actually pull that through. And its final, emergence or manifestation. So there's a...
It requires an absolute to act on it, basically, is what you're saying. When it has been brought about to a culmination where it is full and complete as that idea in whatever it needs to be, and it's, you know, full conception, if you will, the Trinity acts on it and brings it into being. And it's only by virtue of an absolute, both the Trinity and in conjunction with the deity, the universal, and the unqualified absolutes functioning in concert, that this being comes into being. And that's an interesting concept right there. So trinitization always involves the absolutes. Eventuation always involves ultimates. And evolution always involves the supreme. There's always...
Nice.
So that, there,
beings involved in growth of whatever kind that is.
Well, what I wanted to point out there is that that's an example of super additive outcome. Once that's completed, you actually have a being in existence that didn't exist before. But even in our day-to-day lives, we can sort of keep that pattern in mind, you know, the potential for creating super additive outcomes, however we do that. Sometimes it's combining concepts. Sometimes it's combining people. You know, sometimes it's combining ideas. Or you think about, like, music, for example. You get together and have a jam session. You know, that's a super additive outcome.
Oh, for sure.
So this idea kind of runs through so much. It's almost like a master pattern that we can hitch our wagon to. See where it goes.
It is the master pattern, yes.
And the absolutes, get them involved. No telling where it's But it's so kind of cute, though, you know, to think about this, because these sanitized beings, you know, that these two mortals get together with the same idea and they cook it up. And that trinitized being then is like the expert on that one idea, right? And they have the whole support of the Trinity and everything behind it. So they're like, you know, on a very, very high level with that one idea. But they don't know anything about anything else, or very little.
Yeah.
And they say, I forget the word they use, but they said to watch them and see how they have total mastery of this one thing. But meanwhile, they have to sort of teach them about really basic stuff just to function socially and, you know, be able to join the team or whatever, because they're in high demand. These beings are in high demand because they can come into situations and give a complete analysis on that one thing that they know everything about. But it's I forget what word they use, but it probably wasn't cute, but still endearing, maybe.
There you go.
They're very earnest about what they know, but they're really dependent on their coworkers to explain basic stuff. I don't know. Fascinating aspects of how the universe works and how things are provided that are needed, you know, by whatever means can be arranged.
Well, so we have this concept here that we're being given from the beginning, that the Father and the Son decided they needed an actor for them, someone that would be an executive for them. And so they conceive of this perfect and infinite actor that can execute on their level everything that needs to get done. And so that's what the first few paragraphs get us into. You know, they describe this in paragraph 3 as, first of all, inherent in the nature of this transaction and mutual recognition of the personality interdependence of each and the executive union of all three, the cycle of eternity is established. The Paradise Trinity is existent. The stage of universal space is set for the manifold and never-ending panorama of the creative unfolding of the purpose of the Universal Father through the personality of the Eternal Son and by the execution of the God of Action, the executive agency for the reality performances of the Father, Son, Creator partnership.
I love that reality performances. It's just so theatrical.
What do you play? Oh, I play the trumpet. What do you play? Oh, I play reality.
I'm performing reality right now, yes.
Right.
I love it.
That's my instrument.
Yes.
Well, in the first, that first magnum opus are the 1 billion perfect spheres flashing into existence.
Oh, nice.
Just as
nice.
They are, and being the pattern for everything that will come after it. We have to be thinking, for one thing, that each of these billion spheres, we are told that they're huge. We're not told how huge they are, but there are some things that you can calculate, and they have to be at least as big as Uversa, and they are probably bigger, and they are probably bigger as you ascend the circuits of Avona, slightly bigger anyway, than the ones on the previous circuit. And it's just fascinating to try to, you know, put that together and to understand that, okay, what would a world that is a million times larger than Urantia and perhaps more, what would they have on it? And what would entail that world being perfect? How many different ways does it have to be perfect? And what would make each world unique from one another? Because you can imagine doing it once. Can you imagine doing it again in a completely different way so that it's not related to the other one, but it's still perfect?
Well, yeah, 1 billion individual concepts. And they're individual. Each world is an individual perfect concept that gets to be lived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Experienced.
Well, then there's all the personalities that exist on those worlds too.
Right.
And they're all different. And they're all different.
And that's part of the originality. Right.
Yes.
Everything's original. Everything's a mass. Everything's a pattern. Well, they call it the pattern universe.
Right.
So the interesting thing is about the human mind. the human mind, the way we would do it, the way we can easily conceive of it, is to begin, and obviously it's only by reducing, by making it less somehow. So the human mind will want to say, well, perhaps one could be a whole thing full of coniferous trees, and it would be like an alpine thing, or like tundra, so it would be like that kind of boreal forest. But what you've done there is you haven't made it a world, you've made it like a region of a world expanded to cover that entire world. And you've limited what it can be. And you know that it has to be the opposite, that there's so much replete aspect to life on that world that it could be the only world in existence. And it would be full and complete and have everything that it would need, that in fact maybe even that the universe in a human conception would need. And that's one world.
Yeah, that's one world, yeah.
Let alone hundreds of millions of worlds on a circuit, for the outer circuits, and then even for the inner circuits, we know 35 million worlds and up, going from first to second to third. And then how would you differentiate the worlds in a circuit? And what would be the reason for those differences? And we know some of those differences because of what comes later in terms of our immortal progression. But, just trying to imagine how the infinite mind of the infinite spirit was acting on the thought and expression of the universal father and the eternal son to put something together that would actually fit their conception, their expression, and would fit an action that would also fit the nature of the infinite spirit.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and yeah, it is. It's I was going to say, it certainly speaks to the need of for the appreciation of diversity. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
do you guys remember, do you know if they ever give an indication of what the population is of these worlds? How many beings
are
in these worlds?
Oh, no. Yeah,
they ever
No. 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 It's so far transcends, because for one thing, they're not even telling us the size.
Right.
You know, these worlds have to be huge, and in just the size relationship, there must be transcendental possibilities. We're told that all reality, from the finite to, you know, supreme to absonite to ultimate to supreme ultimate to co-absolute realities, exist on all of these worlds. From top to bottom, there's realities coexisting on these worlds that normally wouldn't exist. So if you had to put them in an average class, you'd have to say they are largely transcendental, that they may not be timeless, even though they are eternal. They exist in time and exist in space. There is that functioning there, but they keep going and they've always existed. What do you say about that? And what are the possibilities that transcend time and transcend space? And you just can't conceive of everything that's there. Although they do make the point of saying, right, in that one place, but there are real lakes and rivers here.
Yes, yes.
We'll give you that handhold. Okay.
Yeah.
And a Burger King down the street.
Yeah. maybe a Burger King. Okay. All right.
And a glass lake.
I'm sure some of those are glass. Yeah.
It's probably not glass. Mm. It's a crystal lake is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Single
it's
unified
not,
crystal.
It's not silica. Yeah.
No, it's not silica. No.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, something that's occurring to me while we're reading this, you know, like comparing stories. So like this whole, like I mentioned before, this whole, what we're reading is a story. You know, the Big Bang Theory or people's other speculations. Those are stories too, right? So, you know, somebody's walking up, let's say, somebody's telling this story over here, somebody's telling this story over there. I think this is a very interesting story. But it's not just interesting. The thing that impresses me about it is the scale of it, or the feeling of magnitude, or this, they use the word stupendous, that the story is consistent with the nature of reality, even as we're able to observe it. You know, just looking up in the sky, the stars and all that stuff, let alone if you pull out a telescope. So we need a story that's consistent with the scale and magnitude and gravitas and just outright, you know, baffling, stupendous nature of reality as we observe it. And this story does that. I think it matches with what we see.
Yes.
Whereas the Big Bang Theory doesn't even begin to do that. So you have a big explosion.
No.
You know, that doesn't really take you anywhere.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
literally the watchmaker who winds up the clock and lets it go. You know, that version of God that I forget the preacher, that it wasn't Paisley, it was somebody else back in the 1700s. But that grand watchmaker, all he did was wind up the clock, made sure that it was in, and then lets it go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then everything goes unfolds from there.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, tick, tick, tick.
Well, it's a lazy God, basically, you know, that is being conceived of.
There's no, no input.
Well,
ongoing input.
It just shows the limits of that creative imagination too.
Right.
And then dogmas are created around
from what they know. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, we're all limited by the extent of our
mm-hmm.
knowledge and experience, and we, you know, draw conclusions. Yeah, that's why revelation. But that's why we have to be
so
careful
important.
about our frame of reference to make sure it's flexible. I mean, I have a situation that when I'm around the emergent Christians is that there's a part of me that feels dogmatic about my certainty about the truth of the Urantia revelation. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I need to be able to dance around all of that, somehow keep it flexible
mm-hmm.
because it's only, you know, a story for us to take us beyond the limited story we have so far. And yet it satisfies so much. I mean, like just what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
today. Oh my God. It, you know, it talks about patterns and the underlying
mm-hmm.
meaning behind the reality we experience. And so it just,
mm-hmm.
it is a challenge for me to, because that's why it's really difficult for me to share with them because it comes across as another authority, you know, and they are
I can imagine.
See, they're a lot more flexible with where they are because they're still asking questions. They're still reaching out, and it's almost like maybe they don't want the answer. Maybe they want to find the answer themselves, you know. So, I mean, there is a real push-me-pull-you that I experience. It's like, how much do I share? And, you know, it's like the revelation says, you know, we can't give you too much information. You know, you need to do it through your own creative imagination.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we know that Jesus, Michael went through that. He had to hold back all kinds of stuff and just, you know, put out little, you know, nibbles here and there, and even those were misunderstood, you know, so it's just part of the nature of the walk on this planet. It's tenuous.
Yeah. But, you know, if we can speak from our experience, that helps. Speaking from your own experience, of course, is always the thing.
Exactly.
I mean, there's limits to where you can go with that, but still. I mean, in terms of winning sympathy, you know, or asking questions, too, you know.
Right.
About, you know, like you bring up some cosmic question, you know, well, what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's fun to challenge people's faith a little, too. You know, it's like,
Yeah, sure.
You know, just the whole idea of... I don't know.
Are they biblical? Or how biblical are they?
The ones I hang out with are they're very intelligent as how they interpret biblical past. They use a lot of them really are into philosophy, especially Alfred North Whitehead is becoming the new guru an evolutionary God, and you know, in other words, they're pushing the envelope of traditional theology, and so I mean that's what I'm saying is that's where they're having fun is by discovering these new ways of interpreting reality, you know, and but they're very intellectually astute. I mean, I think of Trip Fuller. He's absolutely brilliant, you know, in the way he, and Philip Clayton is another one. And Diana Butler Bath, as a historian, she's a real good leveler, because she tries to keep it on a more personal or even poetic level. She'll temper some of the over theological interpretation. So it's really a wonderful, it's a wonderful dance to be among them, you know, to see how they're exploring new truths. And and you know, I just get in there on some of these chat rooms when they're having a podcast, and I'll put in concepts, you know, that I think are emphasizing what they're saying. And I don't try to go too far.
Good. It's a good idea.
But just enough, you know, and it's fun. And they are even responding to some of the things I'm saying, you know, because they watch the chat box, and so it's my one little way of participating in their conversation. I urge our family to do this kind of thing, because it's really fun, you know. It's a way of being in the room, in the conversation. I mean, I enjoy it. Other people are doing other things, but that's one of the things I really enjoy. I'd rather be in the actual room with them, you know. And I try to do that as much as I can, but you know, but this is what I do in the meantime. It's just introducing concepts is a challenge. Because of our having the revelation as a source, it's a joy and a challenge.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you can imagine the angelic perspective on this process, you know, and you have angels who may be assigned to this group or however that works, and they're watching the minds of all the people involved and seeing how the thinking is evolving here and there, and this person gets this, that person gets that, and this person's running aground over here, you know, in their thinking.
Oh, my.
I'm sure they're going to be observing all of that. So probably could help out. You know, so it sounds like that's what you are doing. You can do it.
I'm counting on them. I'm counting on them to send me here, or, you know, pay attention to what's going on over here. You know, I mean, I know that's going on to some degree with all of us. So it's just, you know,
this is very evolutionary, it sounds like.
It is.
Very evolutionary, very incremental. You know, there's probably two steps forward and maybe a step and a half back sometimes or whatever.
Yeah.
But
incremental.
Yeah, to see when progress is being made, or to have, you know, kind of a meta perspective conceptually on what's actually going on. I mean, you're not just another one of them in a sense. You know what I mean? Because you're not starting from the same place.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you have to play it. You have to kind of play a role.
I know.
It's attractive.
Yeah. And you want to, maybe hopefully they'll sit back at some point and go,
Right.
I hadn't thought of that. You know, you know, it's like you say, incremental. Yeah, incremental.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as they say in British pubs, time, gentlemen, please. It's time, gentlemen, please. It's time to drink up your beer. So, gentlemen and lady. we are down to our last 50 seconds. What a wonderful conversation. And, you know, a wonderful end to this is that last paragraph. It is enough of a reach of the material mind of the children of time to conceive of the Father in eternity. We know that any child can best relate himself to reality by first mastering the relationships of the parent, the child-parent situation, and then by enlarging this concept to embrace the family as a whole. They're letting us know why they're telling us this. We want you to know about the family, and thereby you might get to know about the universe that comes out of that family. thank you, everybody. This was a wonderful discussion. We will talk next week. And
All right.
Until
okay.
then.
Look forward to it. Mm-hmm.
Bye for now.
Goodbye. Love
all
you
right.
guys.
Yeah, likewise. Have a great week.
You too. Take care, Pam.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.